Welcome to Pouring Over Pages, a podcast of words and wine. I'm Alexa.
And I'm Maritza.
Time to get lit on literature. Jumping back into it.
And we have a lot of literature for everybody today.
So much literature.
We have a lot of literature for everybody today. This is our special episode. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit different than our previous episodes. We will get back to that format. But I also think that it's worth taking a pause and reflecting on what has happened and arming the choir with resources, whether it be books or progressive media outlets or anything that we can provide that helps contextualize what's happened. And I think that this is a really great place to start. So thank you, because this was 100% your idea, not mine.
Yes, I think it's part of my therapy because, I mean, as you were, as I were, you know, as most of us, most of us as in people I know, but like a lot of us were kind of upset by the happenings on election day and what proceeded
such an understatement.
After that. Yeah. We were in a dark, dark place.
We're in a dark, dark place now. I mean, yeah, I agree with you. I think that this is our way of feeling like we're doing something.
Yeah.
More than just sharing our views, more than just doing this podcast, more than just voting. Sharing resources, I think, is the most important thing that we can do mm-hmm. at this time, because we're living in a time where finding credible resources that you can trust can actually be really difficult.
It is. And I was talking to someone the other day, I forget who it is, like we're millennials. We know life before and after the internet. We know how to suss out what's real, what's right. fake. We were growing up in an era where we get viruses on our downloads and stuff. So we are very critical. And from what I'm hearing, the new generation is not as critical. And they just take everything on the internet as face value, which is so wrong.
It's such a strange thing that has happened, because you think of like our parents who used to tell us, don't believe everything you read on the internet and be really careful about the internet. And then we came along and we are that way. I would say we're pretty cautious. And now, like you said, there's just full on, I trust whatever I read. But you know what bothers me more than that is that we're living in this moment where influencers and anybody with a podcast, and I see and understand the irony of what I'm about to say, is that just about anybody, if they have a large enough platform, can influence people to believe things that aren't true.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me is really terrifying. And horrible. There's this whole movement now of especially young men with a microphone who are, you know, we're just asking questions. Like, they're not openly conservative, but they're just asking questions.
Yeah.
And they move in this direction where it's really, I think, frightening, because their influence is real. And we saw that in this election. You know, I can't believe I'm saying this. I'm worried about young men.
Yeah.
I'm genuinely worried about young men. And if there are young men listening, I'm sorry. But we're living in a time where just the information that is out there can be really skewed in terrible ways, and it's frightening. And that's not to say in any way that some of the stuff that we're going to show you guys today does not come from a particular perspective. We're progressives. We are very open about that. But we also believe that you can have progressive media that is truthful and honest and mm-hmm. self-reflective. And so we're going to talk about that. But yeah, have we been okay since the election? No.
Not really, no.
No, not at all. I was devastated, like truly devastated. Not only because I am very afraid of what is to come, and because I'm genuinely afraid of Donald Trump and the entire MAGA movement and what they're going to do to this country that's going to be irreversible, but also because I love Kamala Harris, and I have for a really long time. I loved her when she ran last time. Mm-hmm. I was a supporter. I still have the t-shirt, Kamala Harris for the People, back from the 2019 primary. So I was devastated because I thought we could do it this time.
Yeah.
My toxic trait was that I allowed myself to feel hope.
Yeah, no, and I agree with that. The hope is what kills me, because it's, you're like, oh my God, wow, the chance, the prospect of our first female president, and then add on to that Black, add on to that like progressive, add on to that younger, like all of these hopes and dreams within this person, and you're essentially being told that they'd rather an old white man who's racist, homophobic,
convicted felon,
xenophobic, every
liable for sexual assault.
Yeah, all these horrible things, all the worst of the worst that you wouldn't ever want to even encounter this person on the streets. And you would rather pick them than a woman who's qualified.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm going to call bullshit on the people who say that they don't care about those things and that this was just about the economy. I'm going to call bullshit on that. Because if you're a living, breathing human being, you cannot possibly believe that that man is for you.
No.
You cannot possibly believe that because your eggs are expensive, that that's a justification for voting for a person like that. I don't buy it. I don't care. And I wholeheartedly believe that in America, no woman is ever good enough.
No, agreed.
100%. I hold that in my heart. I don't know what else you need to do. She's the only presidential candidate who has ever had experience in all three branches of government. She has worked unbelievably hard. She's extremely intelligent. She had wonderful policy proposals. But the standard for her was unrealistic. I'm not going to say she ran a perfect campaign. There were moments that I was frustrated. But none of those things would ever make me even consider voting for Donald Trump. And so I just think that we're in a place where the information age is informing our politics in a way it never has before. And I know we're preaching to the choir, but this episode is about arming the choir.
Yeah.
Like, we need to share these resources. And everyone listening, share these resources with other people, especially persuadable voters.
Mm-hmm.
I think people can be persuaded. I am not a persuadable voter. You're not a persuadable voter. But there are a lot of people, the vast majority of Americans, their views are all over the place.
Yeah.
All over the place. They can have some right-wingy beliefs and some very progressive beliefs and some socially liberal beliefs mixed in with some fiscal conservative stuff. That's the vast majority of Americans. Most Americans are a hodgepodge of beliefs. Not everyone is like us,
where
we just lean
totally to the left.
It's totally different. But most people are like that. And that gives me hope in the sense that if we're able to actually use progressive media and we're actually able to shift the information, the way that the information is dissipated, then we can persuade those people.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe that. It's just, it's hard because you have a lot of people funneling a lot of money into these right-wing podcasters and news outlets. And I saw a really depressing stat the other day that like 70% of people who watch the news watch Fox.
Yes.
And I was like, fuck me, dude.
It's horrible. It's so bad.
I was like, how can anyone stomach Jesse Waters for more than 5 minutes? That fuck, you know?
But they do. And they vote.
And that's the thing is that they normalize sexism and racism and xenophobia in ways that makes it feel okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why people are empowered to speak the way that they speak and to say things like, your body, my choice, which I consider to be a threat. And if someone ever came up to me and said that, I believe I have full authority to punch you in the face.
Yeah.
Full authority.
No.
Like, fuck you.
Super threat. No, for sure.
It's insane. And so we just, again, we have to find a way to push back.
Yes.
And gain people on our team.
Yeah. And I think with this episode, too, it's like a moment of we essentially grieved the loss of a hopeful future.
Yeah.
And for a while, I was like having these mood swings and these moments of like, I just cry randomly or I got really angry or everything. So I think now that we're like, the dust has settled. It is what it is. We got to accept. Yeah. He's going to be our next president.
Yep.
And yeah, half the country voted based on bullshit reasons or straight up racism and just, you know, sexism, et cetera. So now is the time to look forward and think, what can we do? We voted. That job is done. Now what's next for us to do? How can we move forward? How can we move the cause forward? How could we bring hope back into this country where I think a lot of us have lost it?
Yeah, exactly. And that's, you know, it's interesting that you say hope because a lot of people associate that with Donald Trump.
I know, which is so
right. Crazy. They associate like a better future, lower prices, a secure border, all of these things with him. And obviously, I don't believe that. But I think it's important to understand that he also does appeal to people's emotions in the way that Kamala Harris appealed to ours. Right.
Mm-hmm.
That this is not something that's 100% rational all the time.
Yeah.
And so that has to be acknowledged and that has to be addressed. And, you know, I read a really great article this morning in The Atlantic by Jon Favreau, who's favorite of mine. I listen to his podcast all the time. And he talks about how Democrats need to stop just talking to each other.
Yeah.
And then you start talking to voters and get out there and listen to the average American voter. And I think that that's a huge part of it, too. I will admit, truly, wholeheartedly, that Democrats didn't do the best job of making the working class feel seen mm-hmm. in this election. You can't look at someone who's struggling to pay for their bills and say, yeah, but the economy is doing fine, like the Dow and the NASDAQ and blah, 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 and like go on this like whole speech about how technically everything is great and the economy is the envy of the world because post-COVID we did better than the EU and blah, blah, blah. That just makes people feel bad.
Yeah, it's tone deaf
to the voters. It's tone deaf because so many people are struggling. And so that to me is really important. And the other point that I want to make that I think is equally important is that I think the Democratic Party needs to stop being the party of purity.
Yeah.
Like, not everyone in our tent, which is a huge tent, is going to have the exact same opinions as you. And I think that Democrats do such a phenomenal job of eating their own.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you're not hyper-progressive on everything, then you're terrible and you might as well be a Republican.
Yeah.
No. No. Like, the reason we live in a democracy is because the only way that our government functions is by persuading people and creating consensus. And so if you're just constantly making people feel bad about what they think,
it's true.
And you're making them feel like they have to pass some sort of purity test, then in what world would they want to join your team?
Oh, never, never. And you're just showing you're even more elitist.
Yeah.
And like proving them all right.
Exactly. We're just the same. And so I want people to know that in conversation with others, there are so many ways to find common ground. And I don't know. I think that's the only thing we can possibly do.
Yeah, totally.
Is find that common ground. Because I think that at the end of the day, we are all worried about the same things.
Yeah.
And we just want to build a better future. And we can do that in a way that builds consensus and doesn't make us look like elite assholes.
Yeah, for sure.
That's if I could drop this mic, that would be the moment to do it. Because we need to do better at that.
Yes.
But okay, so to get into the reading list, there are a couple topics that I think you and I are both really passionate about, and that's why we particularly put this list together, and this list reflects some of those topics, and they include but are not necessarily limited to abortion, masculinity, American history, and of course that includes Black history, and issues of immigration. I think those are the top four things that we can speak about in an educated way.
Yeah.
And in a way that we understand, and these are things that you and I care about. There are other topics, of course, that had a lot to do with the election or that, you know, pushed the election one way or the other. And that's not necessarily what we would want to focus on. But I think these topics are things that we've either touched on, like in previous episodes, or that we know a lot about, care a lot about. And before we even maybe list some of these books or I talk to you about some of them, I figured that I can also share some progressive media outlets in case you're maybe not interested in like reading a full book right now, or you don't want to dive into nonfiction right away. There are so many outlets that are really fantastic, and we can be sure to share these on Instagram too. Yeah. But a couple of podcasts that I think you guys can listen to apart from this one are Pod Save America and Pod Save the World. I think those are really great resources, especially Pod Save America for national issues and news. This is a political podcast. One of the guys that's on the podcast is Jon Favreau, the guy I just talked about, and he was a head speechwriter for Barack Obama. So
amazing.
They just have such a cool thing going for them. They've been doing the podcast for years and years and years, and they're just absolutely phenomenal. The other one that kind of reminds me of us is Hysteria, also a Crooked Media production, but it's two women, and they're both absolutely hysterical, but they talk about the news and current events as it relates to women and from the perspective of women. So it's phenomenal. Veering on the comedic but still political, I would say The Weekly Show with Jon Stewart, because he dives into politics every single week. And it's a great, 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 very funny way to kind of get your news. And if you want something that's the exact opposite, extremely serious and very matter of fact, the NPR Politics podcast. They're always very short. They're never longer than 15 minutes. So you get your like daily dose of whatever's going on in the news, bam, and that's there. Let's see. Abortion Every Day. Okay, so now we're moving on to blogs. Abortion Every Day is an amazing, incredible Substack newsletter, email, everything by Jessica Valenti, and one of her books is on this list. So we'll be sure to talk about that. The other one is Airplane Mode by Liz Plank, another author we're featuring today. And the last one is The Message Box, which is another political newsletter that comes from one of the other hosts of Pod Save America. Mm. So these are all just really great places. If you want to read something, there they are. If you want to listen to something, there they are. They're also on YouTube. And that's just the easiest way, I think, to get nuanced and fun information without, like, watching cable news. I don't know about you, but, like, I can't fucking watch cable news.
No more.
I can't watch, like, CNN. Like, I can't watch any, like, legacy media anymore. I don't know why. I think I'm, like, too depressed about the election, but I can't, like, see it. Like,
no, I know.
It just makes me feel like an old lady at a doctor's office. You know? I can't do it.
No.
I can't do it.
We don't need to. Like,
we don't need to. So how do you want to do this? Do you want to go book wine or do you want to do all books, all wine?
We could do, so my wine list, because obviously informing yourself is very important and arming yourself with all the facts is very important, but also supporting those in the struggle, you know, supporting the small businesses, supporting the women, you know, the Black winemakers, the LGBT plus winemakers and producers, supporting small businesses that share values with you. So you could then, you know, lift them up and lift the country up together. So yeah. I think maybe I have similar buckets. So maybe as you finish one bucket, I could pop into it with the wine.
Love it. Love Perfect. It. And also, like, let's be real. In the midst of all this, like, you also just deserve to have some fun and have great wine.
Yes,
like, you don't have exactly. to fight this battle miserably. Like, it's great to support these amazing, you know, wineries and all these small businesses, but it's also like you deserve it too.
You
like, how it. Else do we get through this
yes.
if we're not like, you know what? We deserve some wine and a break and a good time because we're fighting a war.
We are.
And that literally. Takes a long time.
Yeah.
It takes very a hell of long, a long fucking so, time.
Good to sip.
Well, let's start with this incredible book called Abortion. Our Bodies, Their Lies, and the Truths We Use to Win. And this is, again, by Jessica Valenti. And she is, I discovered her recently, and I know she's been doing work for a long time, so I don't want to, you know, minimize that. But she's recently become someone that I lean on a lot when it comes to getting news about abortion. And it's incredible because even as someone who cares very deeply about this topic, I think anyone who listens to this podcast knows that that's like my number one thing. I would have never imagined in a million years that you could have a newsletter that comes out multiple times a week and that there's that much news about abortion going on across the country.
That's crazy.
It's crazy. So she dives into the different laws that are being passed in different states or, of course, any sort of lawsuits that are happening. Very recently, she wrote about how the attorney general in Texas, Ken Paxton, who's a fuck, is trying to sue a doctor in the state of New York because she shipped abortion pills to a patient in Texas. And so, of course, Texas has no authority over New York or jurisdiction over New York. But it just goes to show you the lengths that people are willing to go to essentially suppress the rights of women. And so Valenti does a phenomenal job of keeping you informed on everything that's going on, showing you that this is a hot button topic every single day, that people are fighting this front every single day. And it's just really user friendly. Like, it explains things in a way that is so easy. And the book is short. It's a short hardcover book. And it's something that is so easy for you to take with you. And it dives into a lot of her research over the past couple of years. So the newsletter is like a great way to keep yourself engaged and know about what's happening right now. But the book is really more about all the research she's done, how we've gotten to this point, and how we can support women moving forward. So for me, this book is an absolute must-buy. It's so short, you've got no excuse.
Yay! I love that.
So another book that I think is really important and not necessarily in the same vein, but I think related to, is For the Love of Men by Liz Plank. And Liz Plank is so incredible. I'm obsessed with her. She also has a Substack newsletter called Airplane Mode that I spoke about earlier. And this book, For the Love of Men, is all about changing our perspective on masculinity. And how we can actually create an argument for feminism being the liberation of men too. You know, if you have, how can I phrase this? If you have men in your life who don't really understand how feminism can affect them, this book is for them.
Mm-hmm.
Because the ways in which we constrain men is also what causes some of the issues for women, right? For example, men should not show emotion. They shouldn't cry, right? And so that leads to more men you know, becoming violent or committing suicide or all sorts of other things that affect our society. And so the book is about transforming toxic to mindful masculinity and about the ways in which that can then change our society, improve our society. And she does it in such a thoughtful way where it's full of anecdotes and full of like little stories and things like that. So you actually have examples and you understand how these things can apply to you and your life. And I really love that because it's user-friendly. And she's also just really funny, and she has a great writing style, keeps you engaged. And if you already know her Substack or you read her Substack, you're already aware of that writing, but the book is a little bit more serious. And it just gives you the tools that you need to, I think, better equip yourself to understand men better. Because, you know, if there's one thing that this election taught me, it's that young men don't feel seen.
No.
You know, I could go on one rant and be like, yeah, you don't feel, shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Okay, sit down.
Same.
Sit down and shut the fuck up for once.
You've been seen for how many centuries?
Shut the fuck up. But then there's another part of me that's like, that won't get them on my side.
Yeah, yeah.
So I will attempt to understand why it is that they feel that way and why they feel more seen by a Republican Party and by that type of masculinity that's being presented to them. I mean, this election was about two types of masculinity. The Doug Emhoff, Tim Walz type of masculinity, where you support women in your life and you stand up for women in your life. Or the Donald Trump, J.D. Vance type of masculinity that I think, frankly, is disgusting.
Disgusting. Horrible.
Horrible. So this book will give you insight on that. And I think it's, again, really well written, really interesting, really funny, and definitely deserves to be looked at. I think I've spoken about Red Clocks before in the past by Lenny Zumas. That is actually a fiction. That's a novel. So it's a great story about abortion getting banned in the U.S. and how that affects women in this modern day. And so
it's fiction, you said?
And it's fiction. And it's crazy because I read it like when it first came out. I think it was like 2017 or something. Yeah. And I was like, oh, my God, this is so crazy how like dystopian this
what
is.
What if this happened?
And now I'm like, this is not dystopian. This is my life. Like,
this is reality.
Yeah. There's like a whole scene where like, because one of the characters, I think she's a teacher, I can't remember. And she's like, and now women are resorting to like throwing themselves down the stairs. In my head, I was like, yeah, that's exactly the world that we're living in now. And so basically, I just think it's so important because it can help you better understand how abortion access can be critical, especially to young people. It doesn't have to be nonfiction. It can be something that you enjoy reading. But at the same time, it really paints a picture of what abortion bans do to communities, to women, and how going underground can really create a lot of unsafe spaces for women. So I love that. Let's see. Abortion in the Age of Unreason, A Doctor's Account of Caring for Women Before and After Roe v. Wade. So I love this book, and I absolutely love this man, the author. This is Warren Hearn, and I first heard about him on Hysteria's podcast. So he was a guest on the Hysteria podcast, and he was interviewed, and he has this amazing book that is about his experience as a doctor. And we did an episode on Life's Work by Dr. Willie Parker. And so I just think it's really important that we have perspectives here about, you know, from doctors and hear from them and how it is that this affects their practice. They know better than anyone how banning abortion really ruins the lives of women. So I just think that this is a really important book. And he just seemed really sweet.
Oh,
I listened to him on the podcast and I was like, this is just a nice man who like really cares for women. And he was also someone who knew, I don't know how old he is, but he's definitely, I think, of the generation of Dr. George Tiller, who was murdered in church by a crazy anti-abortion lunatic fuck. And that is something he also talks about, and that it shook, obviously, the community and made people afraid, you know, to do what they need to do to care for their patients.
Yeah.
And so
I mean,
I thought
surprised
that,
that we're not seeing a lot of that now.
You know, I am too.
I feel like it might, I don't know.
You know what I think? I think that they feel like they won.
But they don't need to do that because they've already won.
They kind of won. So they're just like, you know what? I'm going to chill for a little bit.
I'll chill.
We've been yelling at women in front of a clinic for years. So now I can like take a day off.
We'll just hit you with lawsuits now.
Fuck them. So those I would say are the books that are about like women, abortion, women's issues, masculinity, femininity, the things that I think do inform us now and push this election in a certain direction. So I can't recommend those enough. I think they're they're all great choices.
No, they sound great. And especially I was interested about the pre and post row, because when I hear stories from like gynos who were working before.
Oh, yeah, your friend.
My friend. And he was just saying like, oh, doctors now are trying to get textbooks from back then to see what they would do in these moments of, you know, complications and you know, hanger abortions and stuff, because that was the reality back then. And unfortunately, it is the reality now. So it's
just like, if that were happening to men, they would stop that immediately. They would find a solution immediately.
Immediately. They would riot. They would like
Selena Meyer said on Veep, if men could get pregnant, you could get an abortion at an ATM.
Exactly.
It's so fucking infuriating. It's just, this country fucking hates women. Anyway.
Anyway. I think I already cursed America out like twice today, just with the healthcare situation. But
free Luigi.
Oh, and I have a great list of female produced wine that I just want to share with you. I have a much more extensive list on my blog, alexiswinediary.com, but I just picked out some that popped in my head. First off is Chateau Felonsegur. They're in the heart of Bordeaux, and it's managed by this amazing woman, Véronique Daus. I met her. I was actually there in Bordeaux, and I met her last year when I went to visit. And she's a badass. She's just, like, running shit. Like, the wines are amazing. The estate's awesome. They're just, like, a really, like, wonderful producer. So I was enamored. She's been working with them for, like, over 15 years, which I think is amazing and progressive, considering that it's usually, like, a man's world in the wineries. I wanted to point out again Julia Hoyle, the winemaker at Hosmer Winery. We went there last year, was it? Or 2 years ago at this point. It's hard to...
Last year.
That feels so like fun. 5 years ago.
That was so fun. She was so badass.
Yes. I love her. She's like about our age, the lead winemaker there. And she's just badass and really like touting women's rights and queer rights. And she was just like all around an amazing person. And I just, you know, I always love the Finger Lakes. I think it's a completely underrated wine region. So she's another good one to support. Out of California, we have Martha Stoumann and Raft Wines. I love both of those producers. One, Martha is a self-funded first-generation winemaker who wanted to make wines that were uniquely Californian, but with a twist. We've had some of her wine before.
Love.
Amazing. Uncle Drew set us on that. So thank you, Uncle Drew. And then Raft Wines is with Jennifer. She's a badass millennial winemaker. She just actually had a baby, and she's just like making the wine, strapped with the baby. She's amazing too. And it's these smaller producers that, you know, you really make an impact when you're purchasing from them. Because, yeah, you could go to Publix and buy whatever off the shelf, but they're not going to feel it. It's these winemakers who, you know, have smaller bottling and just resources that are going to feel it. And that's why, you know, I also over here love Ariano Cipinti in Sicily. She's a biodynamic winemaker who is very much into the land and respecting the land and keeping everything preserved. And I just adore her too. She's like a millennial too. So help and empower young women, all women across all walks of life. When you empower women, great things happen, I think is what I'm like trying to convey here.
It's so true. And also, like, selfishly, let's be real. You look so much cooler when you go to like a dinner party and you've got like something like that, like a Martha Stoumann, and then people haven't heard of it. And you're like, oh, you haven't heard of this? It's amazing. And then you're just like, you're the life of the fucking party because you brought something unique and different and interesting.
Exactly.
And so, support women, but also you look cool too.
Yes, exactly. It's a win-win.
It's a win-win, which is amazing. Now, one of the things that we've talked a lot about, I think, on the podcast as well, is America's complete allergy to American history.
It's so true. It's wild. It's like the stuff you don't learn about in high school. And like,
it's like our complete inability to just admit that like bad things happen and sugarcoat it and make a whole big deal out of it when it really doesn't need to be. And as someone who really loves history, and I started art history and history, I know for a fact that it informs our present. And so when you have an entire population of people who don't know the real history of a country, it's very difficult to lose the plot. It's difficult to lose grasp on why it is that we are where we are and why we have a president now like Donald Trump. And And so I think it's really important to read books or watch documentaries or whatever it is about what's really happened in America. Because as we discussed when we talked about Life's Work, mm-hmm. you know, it was Ronald Reagan who created, with the moral majority and Jerry Falwell, this whole issue with abortion now, all these years later. And so it's just really important for us to contextualize things appropriately. And you know, I can't go one episode without saying one bad thing about Ronald Reagan.
No, I was already
burning in
too.
Fucking hell right
I
now.
I know. Yeah, that also gets me, because it's like what Ronald Reagan is to us is what Trump will be to the future now.
Oh my God, yes.
Like, our thing is Ronald fucking Reagan. Like,
fucking Ronald Reagan.
Like, 40 years ago, all his shit is still coming up and affecting our everyday lives. Now it will be fucking Trump for the next 40 years of the next future's plight. I don't
know. God damn it, that's so true.
Like, yeah. Oh, I know. God. I know.
And we have to deal with both of them.
We have to deal with both of them now.
Well, one way to fight against that is to educate yourself.
Yes.
And one of the first books here on the list that I think is really worth mentioning here is We Were 8 Years in Power by Ta-Nehisi Coates. Now, we've read Ta-Nehisi Coates before. There's a previous episode, Between the World and Me, is the book that we featured. But We Were 8 Years in Power is a really interesting book in its format. It's titled We Were 8 Years in Power because it's, of course, referencing the 8 years that Barack Obama was president of the United States, the good old days. And he essentially compiles in this book all the articles that he wrote for The Atlantic during that 8-year period. But he includes, like, journal entries from today. And this was written a couple years ago, so I'm late. But he writes journal entries reflecting on those articles in the present day.
Oh.
So he's like, when I wrote this, you know, this was the context of it, but I feel differently now. And so it kind of allows for you to feel like history is very much alive and that it is something that is kind of, it's like a cloud. It shapeshifts and yeah. and the perspective will change and the context will change, and that gives you a different perspective. And so We Were 8 Years in Power has one of the most powerful, one of the most important articles ever written in The Atlantic, which is the first white president. And it's about, of course, Donald Trump and how Donald Trump is the only president in history that gets to say that he became the president after the first black president and what that meant. And the reality is that Donald Trump didn't have a platform. His whole platform was undo everything the black guy did.
Basically,
right?
Yeah.
And so that article is incredible, but it's in the midst of so many others. And so We Were 8 Years in Power gives you a kind of self-reflective moment from the author while also bringing back moments that were incredibly important within American history, even though it's contemporary history. And it helps us better understand, frankly, I hate to say it, but Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And where we are now and what we're fighting against. So cannot recommend that book enough. And the other is How the Word is Passed, A Reckoning with the History of Slavery Across America by Clint Smith. And again, it's the same point. It's the way in which the United States has or has not kind of faced that history of slavery and of racism and how it informs our present. It's not a very long book. It's available in paperback now. I read it when it first came out a couple of years ago. And I think if you read that paired with We Were 8 Years in Power, it's especially
nice.
Interesting and powerful. And if you're someone who, you know, maybe wants to read We Were 8 Years in Power in chunks, like you can read one article and one reflective journal entry and then move on back to Clint Smith, that's just a great way of doing it. So that's why I paired the two together, because one of them is nonfiction in a very straightforward way, and the other one is nonfiction, but also with a little bit of a personal touch.
Mm-hmm.
So together, they're just really powerful.
Power couple.
I don't always recommend books in pairs like that, but these two tend to work together very well.
Amazing.
And the last one, you know, I gotta mm-hmm. say it. The Truths We Hold by Kamala Harris.
Oh.
I read that book many years ago. I read that book actually when she was a senator, like when she was right after she made Brett Kavanaugh cry, like around that time. And then I reread it when she became the vice presidential nominee. And I remember that being I still remember it was in August. I just, that was such a happy day.
It was such
a happy day. I was like, oh my God. A black woman is going to be vice president.
Yee!
And it's a beautiful book, and it's very short. It's available on paperback, and it gives you perspective of her early life, how she grew up, which, of course, a lot of it you learn from the campaign trail. But this is really more specific and in-depth and talks about how she was raised and what she did as district attorney and then attorney general and then becoming a senator, et cetera. So I have no doubt that she's going to write another book later that, sure. you know, 100%. Definitely encapsulates everything that happened as, you know, senator and vice president. But it's just a really great book and you get to know her. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention it.
No, you have to. She's our girl. She's our girl.
First woman vice president.
That we could claim that for sure. We could, no one could take that from
us. Nope, absolutely not.
It happened. It's in history now forever.
She may be the first, but she won't be the last.
Yes. And then over here on the wine side, I have the McBride sisters. We've had their wine before on the podcast, and it's two sisters who have grown into the largest Black-owned wine company in the United States. They're the most inclusive, accessible, socially aware, and sustainable. They have wine in New Zealand. They have wine in California. They're all over, and they're making amazing, you know, different types of wine. They have one line called Black Girl Magic that comes in a can. They have a bunch of variety, and they're just, you know, why wouldn't I empower two badass Black women? Like, we need to thank Black women more.
We need to revere Black women.
Yes.
Like, that's the only voting block that didn't disappoint.
Basically.
Every other voting block, I'm like, really? Some of you guys really fucked this up.
But
Black women were like, no, we just, like, did the assignment with the, you know, like we always do,
always.
The right way.
Oh, my God.
They're probably so fucking tired.
They're the most tired.
So fucking tired.
Oh, and then we have Lafitte Wine Company. We talked about them before, too. They're an amazing company produced in partnership with the Chateau Saint-Maur, one of the only 18 Cru Classe estates in Provence. They started off with a rosé. Now they have a blanc and a rouge. So they're really, like, breaking it down, making wine accessible as well, and, you know, crossing borders here. And they're great. We have an amazing Somme friend who works for them, Ray, and it's just, you know, a great brand. Also on the list, we have Maison Noir Wines. They're from Oregon. And they're produced to incorporate attitude and personal perspective on wine structures. They're unique and distinct. So they're distinct and unique. They're initially created for some of New York's best restaurants, but now they're available nationwide. Another one is Brown Estate. They were established in 1996. They're out of Napa Valley, and they're 100% Black family operated and owned. We have Theopolis Vineyards, a small lot vineyard and handcrafted winery located in California in Yorkville Highlands of Mendocino County. Okapi Wines is, first off, so it's like my favorite animal, which is super random.
What the fuck is an okapi?
An okapi is like kind of like a horse thing, right? But it has, part of it looks like a zebra and part of it looks like a giraffe and like a little donkey together. It's an okapi.
What?
It's my favorite animal. You can see it at the zoo. It's like really weird looking.
I feel so dumb right now. I'm like, I have no idea what an okapi is.
I think I only know what an okapi is because of, you know, when we used to have encyclopedias.
Oh,
and I
God.
Looked at O, and I think I had an assignment. Like, I'll show you right now to get your live reaction.
Oh, my God. What the fuck is
that? It has, like,
that?
The head of a giraffe, the body of, like, a donkey, and the
and
legs
it's got
of,
the
a
ass of a zebra. It is so ugly that it's cute. You know what
right?
I mean? Like,
it's so ugly and weird.
He
it's
looks
cute.
Like a mistake.
He does. He looks like a he looks like when a kid draws an animal.
Yes.
And then they brought it to life.
Yes. There's like a company that does that. That
yes.
Like, you know, like kids draw something and then they'll like make a stuffed animal out of it. I'm like, well, that's it.
That's
the
it.
Stuffed animal.
But there's a winery with its name.
Crazy.
And they're
love it.
Out of Napa Valley. They're also sustainably grown and thoughtfully made. I actually haven't had their wines yet, but I'm like dying to.
But often. You know you'd like it.
I know I would like it, obviously. And then Wade Cellars, if you're into basketball and if you need an entry point there that you feel more relatable to, why not Wade Cellars? They're from California and obviously established by Dwayne Wade. So that's a whole other
Wade
thing
County.
There. Exactly.
I love Dwayne Wade. You know, I quoted him the other day.
Really?
Accidentally. Because
not Spider-Man.
I won't go into the story here, but I had a not great encounter with someone. And I had to remind them that they were in my house.
Ooh.
And so I pointed down at the floor and I was like, this is my house. And I was like, oh my God, I just did the Dwayne Wade thing where he points down at the fucking court and he's like, this is my house. And I was like, oh my God, look at that. Inspiration can strike you from anywhere.
Anywhere.
From anywhere.
Any facet of life.
Oh God.
I love it.
Well, something else that I think is really important right now is we need to be inspired.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to also, we need to be joyful warriors. Yeah. We need to be, as Kamala Harris asked us to be, happy and tough, but positive. And so I wanted to include a couple books that I think are, that they can do that. That yeah. they can inspire you to feel like you have the energy that it takes to move forward and to fight and to do the right thing. And one of them is Lovely One by Ketanji Brown Jackson. Mm. And Ketanji Brown Jackson, for those of you who might not know, is Associate Justice on the Supreme Court, the first Black woman on the court. And she was recently on Broadway, which I think
yes,
is
great. Yes, I saw that on that? Instagram randomly, but I never saw like the
she
fruits
was on
of that.
Broadway. Yeah, Laz was sending oh it to me. God. I was like, oh my God. And it's her memoir. It's her first book. And it's really incredible. And it goes through her whole life and how she, you know, made it to Harvard and Harvard Law School. And then she met her very established and now what, he's just a very successful doctor. I think he's a surgeon or something. And how he's been like an incredible partner to her. And she's, of course, a Black woman in a field that maybe doesn't have as many Black women, yeah. women as it should. And so she talks about those struggles. And it's just a really inspiring, beautiful book. And she's just incredible. I'm such a huge fan of hers. I think she's such a great choice for the court. I'm so happy that she's there to counterbalance the evil mm-hmm. in Amy Coney Barrett and in Neil Gorsuch and all these other fuckers on the court. But she's just so incredible. And the book is lengthy, but it reads in such a personable way that you get through it pretty quickly. It's like a lot of anecdotes, a lot of personal stories. So I think that's a great one. And I would even categorize Kamala's book
yeah,
in the same kind
yeah,
of category,
good...
you know, just inspiring women of color who have become pioneers in their field and have done incredible things and, yeah. and have made it to the highest offices almost. And I could not recommend this book more. And the last one that I want to talk about before I actually have a kind of subset, which is books from the past. I want to bring a couple of books from our episodes, from past episodes back, is Saving Capitalism for the Many, Not the Few by Robert Reich. And you might recognize his name. He was the Secretary of Labor under Clinton. And he's very active on social media. He's very active on Substack. He has a newsletter as well. And I think he was also a huge supporter of Bernie Sanders at the time. And that's kind of when I started to get to know him a little bit. He's a pretty well-known face.
Oh, he's done a documentary about capitalism
yes.
that I saw too.
Exactly.
Yes, I thought it was very thoughtful.
Exactly. And the documentary is great.
Yeah.
And the book is also fantastic and super user-friendly. I am in no way, shape, or form an economist. I did get the economics award when I was in high school for macro and micro economics.
Both.
And so actually, I could have probably been an economist and like been really good at it. But alas, that didn't happen. But I will say, if you're someone who feels like economics is a totally foreign fucking language and you really need the basics, this book is still for you. It is so just easy to understand. It's really accessible. And it makes the argument that capitalism can absolutely work in a way that makes it sustainable for people of all, mm-hmm. you know, just every single economic level.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to work just for the 1%.
For
it can
Elon
be something
Musk and the Jeff Bezos.
Exactly.
And the,
like as if they need another dime, right?
Oh God.
And so it's just a really great argument. And it goes to, and he gives examples too of like other countries that have done things that we could benefit from and gives a lot of examples. And so
I
think it's great. It's just a super easy, super accessible book. And it's one of those things, in my opinion, that should be required reading. I think everyone should have a basic understanding of economics. It's something that affects you in your everyday life. It affects politics. It's just, it's ingrained in everything that you do just as politics is. And so highly, highly, highly recommend.
Yeah, I was about to say, instead of teaching me algebra in high school, I would have loved to have learned about the economy in this way.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure that book will tell people why Trump will not lower the price of eggs at the grocery store.
Correct. Correct. Very, very basic. I mean, when the price goes up on something like that, does it ever come back down?
No.
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 No, it's not like gas, guys.
No.
Like, it's just,
different guys.
It's very fucking frustrating. But I think the more, and that's the thing, that's why they want to do things like eliminate the Department of Education, mm-hmm. because they don't want people to be educated. An uneducated constituent is exactly the person who will do what you want them to do.
Exactly.
And now, actually, I read this recently. I think you'll find this interesting. You know what the greatest marker is for predicting how someone will vote now? It used to be gender, used to be race. Now it's if you have a college degree.
Oh, that's interesting.
But only 4 out of 10 Americans have a college degree.
Really?
And so it's very difficult to, you know, like the political landscape has just become a lot more difficult for Democrats for that reason.
Of course, yeah.
And so now that's the greatest predictor of how a particular person will vote.
Very interesting. I mean, I don't know. We come from the generation that they told us, get your degree and everything will be all right. You will make money. You will be successful.
Jokes on us.
Yeah, jokes on us. That's why when I hear that, I'm like, what do you mean?
The fuck are you talking about?
They told me I had to go to college and I'll do well.
Exactly. Exactly. It's like, it brings me back, like, it's like PTSD, but it's like, not everyone is cut out for it, you know? I am the kind of person that was absolutely always going to be cut out for college and for master's. Like, I am that bitch. But I don't believe that that should be everybody's path.
No.
You know, a lot of other countries have, like, different programs that prepare you for your career that aren't necessarily for your colleges. And so, yeah, that's the greatest predictor now. And I think that, again, like, just kind of going back to the basics is a great way to inform yourself. And this book does that when it comes to economics. And
for sure.
Can't recommend it enough.
Nice.
I wanted to go back and just include some bonus books, only because they're from previous episodes and we've talked about them. I already mentioned Life's Work by Dr. Willie Parker.
Amazing one, especially for your Christian friends.
Oh my God. It's the best book for Christians who are anti-abortion but are maybe persuadable and interested in actually understanding the politics and the realities of seeking an abortion in America. Dr. Willie Parker is an incredible abortion provider, a Black doctor who was born Christian, and this book is about his moral argument for why there should be choice. Mm-hmm. And reading Dr. Warren Hearn's book, again, just gives you that perspective from a doctor, and I think that that's who we should fucking listen to
when it comes to these things. Doctors, like, for medical issues.
Like, why? Like, When they're going to rip a kidney out of my body, do you think that I wanted someone who was going to shake things up?
Oh my God.
Outsider? No, I wanted a fucking surgeon.
Oh, my God.
You know what I mean?
I can't wait for measles to come back, by the way.
Yeah, measles, polio, rubella, let's go.
Let's fucking go.
You know that I, like, straight up asked my mom the other day? I was like, Mom, like, I know that you, like, vaccinated me for everything, but, like, is there, like, where do you have that? Like, I'm just like, should I get vaccinated for stuff now?
True.
Like, I was like seriously thinking about it. I was like, is there something that the doctor didn't think I needed to be vaccinated for? Because, like, we
eradicated it.
Yeah. Like,
and now
I'm just like, do I need to, like, go back to the doctor? Like, I don't want to get fucking sick because these idiot fucks want to take vaccines off the market. Like, what world are we fucking living in?
We've gone so far just to go so backwards.
Like, people are so dumb. Oh my God. It's, anyway.
I know. We could go on for, like, hours.
But Life's Work is a great place to start. And the other book that I wanted to touch on that I think is just, again, I don't know. I always refer back to it because I think it's, like, I don't know. Is it my favorite book? Untamed is my favorite book?
I think it's a good book because it could be read many times and applied to many different people at different places in their lives.
Totally.
Because, like,
I've reread it multiple times.
It's a one-size-fits-all, almost, kind of a book.
It's kind of, like, the best gift you can give, too.
Yeah.
Like, I just gave Emily that for Christmas.
Yeah.
So I was like,
I bought
God,
one for my stepmom. I'm going to get one for Erica.
It's the best. It's like, it can help anyone, and it's, I don't know, I see it as, like, a tool for women feeling good about themselves and living their most authentic life. And it's not a self-help book. It is a personal... It's like a memoir, but also has, like, life advice. Like, I don't want people to think it's like a self-help book that's, like, cheesy.
It's like
absolutely fucking not.
Reflections.
Yes.
Almost. Less help, more reflections that you could possibly gain from. Like,
exactly. And it's just, it's so well written. Glennon Doyle does a phenomenal job. And I just love her. And I think that if we're going to move forward in this political landscape, and if we're going to keep pushing and doing the right thing and winning in the midterms and winning in 2028, I think that we need to be just happy and well-equipped and authentic and ready to have difficult conversations, and Untamed prepares you to do all of that.
No, and I agree. And you know, Glennon is a lesbian. She had a husband and kids, and then later on in life it came out and was able to, you know, find love again and find herself again. And I think it's really important too to touch upon our LGBTQ plus population. So I wanted to bring that list of wineries. I have a very extensive one on my blog, but here are some highlights. Bird Horse Wines. We brought them on in a past episode. I forget for which book, but it's Partners in Love and in Winemaking, Corrine and Katie. They're wives, and they create innovative and delicious wines in California. Also, one of my favorites, because of their love story, Camins to Dreams. They're a duo, wife and wife, who their paths crossed in 2006. And very much like Glennon, like, they just were friends, very platonic. And then their friendship turned into love down the line. And one of them is Native American, so I think that's really important to supporting that population here. Gary Farrell Winery, their main winemaker is a lesbian. She's worked for them for way more than 10 years, and she leads a partnership with Human Rights Campaign to help those fighting for equal rights. There's a lot of badasses on here that do a lot of charity work like that, like Equality Vines. If you are a Bravo fanatic like me, and if you watch Real Housewives of Orange County like me, you might remember them from a current episode with Heather. So they basically have a California-based winery that champions the rights of women, migrants, and those who identify as queer by donating 15% of the sales to related organizations. So you may have seen them on there because she did a champagne wow with them.
Wow.
A sparkling wine made in the, you know, champagne method. So that's kind of my short list. I have a much longer list, but I think, you know, it's very important to talk about these producers and bring them to the forefront.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just like, it's, I don't know, it just makes you feel good about the fact that this like very white male dominated arena is now so diverse. Like, you've listed so many different wineries that are just moving in an incredible direction.
Yeah. And I tend to make these lists around like Women's History Month in March, Pride in June, Black History Month in February. And every year I kind of like redo the list on my blog. And then I'm like, oh my God, there's more. And it makes me so happy to add more and more. I'm just like women's history. Obviously, I have a very personal connection to Women's History Month. So this past year where I think I made it like a five-parter even.
Damn.
Like, well, every Friday.
Yeah, I remember.
Every Friday.
Yeah.
I think it was Femme Friday. And I'm just like, yes, all the women.
That's amazing. So it's so important. Nice. It's so important. And then you always get that one fucker in the comment section. He's like, why does it matter if it's like on Pride? Why are you putting winemakers? And you're like, why don't you shut the fuck up?
Oh, for sure. I got like so attacked. I forget it was this year or last year on my Pride posts. And yeah. I'm just like, damn, like, I ain't even gay. Like, yeah. I could only imagine the plight my queer friends and family go through. What is that?
It's crazy. It's crazy to me. Like, it's just people really forget that they have this really viable option, which is you can just shut the fuck up. You can shut your fucking mouth.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah. Like, you don't have to comment mean shit.
No.
And I always find it funny because I'm like, you would never say that shit to my face.
No.
You're such a pussy ass bitch. You would never say that to my face. You're commenting, and so you think you're so it's performative. It's super. All fucking performative. Mm-hmm.
And it's always men.
It's all, oh my God, always it's always men. It's always
or
men.
Karen bitches.
Karen bitches. I remember we had that one Karen on the abortion post. Remember that? She was like, it's a baby. And I was like,
give me a second.
Yeah.
No, and then my friend, Christy Made Whole, shout out to her. She was ranting.
She ripped her apart.
I was like, I thank
ripped
you.
Her apart.
I'm like, thank you, babe.
I was like, that's right. You want to say some dumb shit here? Let's go.
Fuck around and find out.
Well, let's see. Our very last topic is immigration. I didn't save it for last for any particular reason, but I do think that it speaks to the fact that we feel that it's really important to reflect on your roots, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, me and you, like, we consider ourselves American. Mm-hmm. We speak English like we've lived here our whole lives, because we have. But at the same time, we recognize the sacrifices of, you know, our family and the people who came here and the ways in which immigrants contribute to our society each and every day.
Yeah.
And I just think it's always important to reflect on that, and that the United States is built solely on people who have suffered and people who have come here.
Yeah.
And it's disappointing when I hear so much xenophobic shit Mm-hmm. And, you know, you take one bad apple and you use them as an excuse for the thousands of people, the millions of people who are here working really fucking hard. And if there's one book that I think really gives you, I don't know, paints a perfect picture of a family that is either undocumented or has mixed documentation status and really kind of allows for you to empathize and understand what that is like, I think it's Infinite Country by mm-hmm. Patricia Engel.
We really enjoyed
recording that episode. We had Erica on as a guest, which I think was amazing. And she gave us an incredible perspective. But that book is, again, and I hate to like be the person who's always like, it's short. But like, it is nice that like the book is short and gives you like such an incredibly strong and powerful argument for having compassion for people who are here and don't have, you know, legal protections. I think it's really important to read a book like this because it reminds you that they're not bad people. And I can't believe I have to say
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no, it's you true,
know?
Though.
It's so hard when I hear people just like, oh, well, you know, like all these fucking immigrants, like they're taking our jobs. I'm like, oh, really? Oh, you'd be are in they? Homestead?
Oh, you'd be in Homestead.
You'd be picking strawberries? Yeah. You fuck. You know,
like no, it just it's
drives
true.
Me crazy. Like they're just here working so fucking hard and they pay taxes and they pay into Social Security. And they don't get to benefit from those things. And you guys want to villainize people who come here and work hard. I'm not for that. And Infinite Country will, I don't know. I feel like you have to be fucking heartless to read that book and still be like, you know what, fuck them.
No,
like,
I agree. And I think with Trump's campaign and stuff, it's painting this horrible picture of immigrants. And it's like faceless almost. It's just yeah. like an entity of, oh, these vile immigrants that mm-hmm. will take from you. Take, take, take. So this book does a really good job in telling a personal story, humanizing these villains in exactly. air quotes and giving you, you know, a personal story that you could, you know, show some compassion, show some empathy. Like you said with the creeps stalking us online and shit, like they would never say it in real life. If you were to meet any of these people in real life, you would feel differently.
Yeah.
Like,
you would never say those things to them.
No.
Because none of those things are true and you know that they're not true.
Exactly.
And I'll say this. I think that you have to be a real ignorant asshole to believe that immigrants or poor people are your enemy and the reason why things here are bad. If you really believe that, you're a fucking idiot. Because the best thing that the Republicans have ever done is teach us how to divide and hate each other. And then that's how they win.
Yeah,
that's how they win. Because they make us enemies of each other instead of us acknowledging who the real enemies are, mm-hmm. which is people in power, billionaires, and people who literally take things away from the working class.
No.
Period.
It's true. It's true.
Period.
And now what, we have like the most wealthy cabinet ever?
Ever.
Ever.
There's like a handful of billionaires on it.
It's insane.
Let me tell you something right now. If I were a billionaire, I would not be on any fucking cabinet. No. I wouldn't be doing shit. I wouldn't lift a finger. Let me tell you. I would not work. These people are crazy.
They are insane. And to sip on some wine to keep you from going insane, we have RGNY Vineyard. It's located in the North Fork Peninsula of Long Island, and they're a family of winemakers with deep regard for their Mexican roots. They value family tradition and winemaking and foster the Rivero Gonzalez legacy. So that's one there. And then we featured this one, Wines by Bibiana. Colombian Bibiana Gonzalez Rave crafts her Alma de Catlea wines to showcase the splendor of California. So we paired that one actually with Infinite Country, and it was really delicious. I think it was a Sauvignon Blanc that we had.
That was delicious.
It was so good. So that's another winemaker that you could follow, you know, get their wine, just feel good about your purchase, that you're contributing to small, you know, wineries, Hispanic, female, queer, black, just, you know, not big white corporations.
Exactly. And yeah. That's really all we can ask of you.
Yeah. At least try.
At least give it a shot. You know, this is good quality stuff, too. I think it's important to, like, note that, you know, they're inspired by who they are and where they come from. And that's reflected in the wine. Like, these are mm-hmm. unique, cool, delicious wines. And these books pair, I think, really beautifully with them. If you guys want us to do more specific pairings, we can definitely do that. But this is a great list of wines and books that will keep you feeling good, keep you informed. Again, this isn't about, you know, throwing too much information at you. It's like, what piques your interest? And is that the issue that you want to take on? I don't know. I think that the most important thing is that you choose what issue is interesting to you and that be the thing that you fight for. You don't have to fight on all fronts. It's a lot. Yeah. It's a lot of work.
It's a lot. You don't have to do everything.
You don't have to do everything. Sometimes we forget that, but it's nice to know that you can take a step back, have a glass of wine, read a good book, inform yourself, and move in the direction of really, really good work. Mm-hmm. Because as Kamala Harris says, hard work is good work.
Oh, yes.
It's my girl.
Our girl. Thank you so much for joining us. We are so excited to kick it back into high gear this new year. We are so excited to bring you more amazing book and wine pairings to keep you going in this year of doom. No, I'm sorry. I'm being a bitch right now. No, in this interesting year.
It's okay.
No one will say 2025 was my year.
Also, no one is saying that it's going to be their year. Have you noticed that? Like, no one on social media is like, 2025 is like, I'm going to be my best version. It's like, no, we're all scared.
We're all terrified. I can't wait what is it, 2029?
Yeah, I think we're good. I think we're ready to say goodbye, but hang out with us on the journey. We're super excited. We've already got the next book lined up. We already know what we want to read. And if you guys have any comments, questions, suggestions, if you want to add to our reading list, I would love to hear from you guys if there are specific books that speak to you or books that, you know, have to do with some of these topics that we talked about today. You know, share that with us. We're more than happy to share that with everyone else. And wines, too.
Yeah, wines, too. If you know of a producer that we should feature, let us know. I would love to have more resources for everyone. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Pouring Over Pages Podcast. Subscribe if you haven't to our feed. Make sure that you give us stars and ratings and everything amazing. Unless you're going to be a cunt and give us one, then go away.
And share our podcast and our Instagram with friends and family that you think might love it.
Absolutely. And with that, we're going to toast with water because we're both sick.
Yep. No alcohol for us today, guys. But that doesn't mean we had any less fun.
Exactly.
Cheers.